We are in week 5 of our series, Bible Q&A, and man, thanks so much for joining us. Go ahead and grab your outline. That'll help you follow along with the talk this morning. As you're grabbing that, let me say hello to those of you in our parent viewing area. Thanks for joining us there. That's a great option if you have small children that you prefer to keep with you during the service. And I want to say hello to those of you who are joining us online, checking this out later on in the week, maybe through that venue. If you have the YouVersion Bible app, you can find the outline on there as well. Just go to events and search Westbridge Church, and this outline is also available in that format. If you have the app, you can check out the Westbridge app as well. And so, man, over the last few weeks, we've been doing this series called Bible Q&A, and the reason that this has been such an important series for us is because the way that we understand the Bible and how we got it and how we should read it and all of those kinds of things, if we don't understand that, what can happen is our approach to the Bible can actually cause damage to our faith. It can actually cause damage to relationships. We can use the Bible as a weapon to hurt other people, and it can actually damage our own faith. And this has been probably one of my favorite series that we've ever done. We've been diving into a lot of big topics about the Bible. One of my favorite analogies was actually from a guy in our home church that meets with us every week, and he said that he has always viewed the Bible like a fishing line. It's all tangled together. And he said, I know there's a beginning and an end, and I'm hoping that it all connects somehow, but it's a mess in the middle. And he said, man, during this series, it's like somebody took that fishing line and just went and just straightened it out. He's like, now I have a clear understanding of, you know, how we got the Bible and where it comes from and how to read it. And it's helped him fall in love with Jesus even more. And so that's really the goal. I love that. And here's why that's so important. As we see Jesus more clearly, we understand who God is more clearly. And it helps us know how we're to live our lives. And what we think about God bleeds its way into every aspect of our lives. And so having a very clear image of who God is and having a very clear image of how we should approach the scriptures actually helps us to live more like Jesus and to love more like Jesus. So as we wrap this up today, I have a concern. As we've been talking about all this, my concern is that we would ever equate spiritual maturity with Bible knowledge. As we learn more and more about the Bible, as we discover more and more about the Bible, my concern is that we would ever say, okay, the more I know about the Bible, the more spiritually mature I'm becoming. And the reason that's a big concern is because we've sort of been programmed by our culture to think that the more you know, the more you grow. That's kind of, right? We've all seen the public service announcements where the celebrities come on and they're standing under the glowing, colorful peacock tail of the NBC logo, and they say, the more you know, bung, 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 you know, and the more you know, the more you grow. And it is true to a certain extent. In order to grow, you do have to learn new things. But learning new things doesn't automatically make you more mature. Learning new things doesn't automatically equate to spiritual maturity. As a matter of fact, number one, spiritual maturity is not about how much you know, it's about how well you love. There's a big difference between knowing a lot of stuff about the Bible and loving really well. There is something in our culture, and I think there's probably something in us as human beings that thinks, okay, the key to becoming a follower of Jesus, a disciple of Jesus, is that I learn a lot of stuff about the Bible. I got to learn a lot of stuff. And I've known people, and you've probably known people as well, who know a lot of stuff about the Bible, and you just don't ever want to be around them. They know so much about the Bible, and yet they become unloving. They've become judgmental. They use the Bible as a weapon in drive-by guiltings. And you've known people who know a lot about the Bible who don't have any peace. You've known people who know a lot about the Bible who don't have any joy. You've known people who know a lot about the Bible who are judgmental, who aren't very loving. And for Jesus, the mark of his followers was not, hey, you should really know a lot about the Bible, or you should have all the right beliefs in a row. For Jesus, it was, this is what's going to mark followers, is that you love really well. It wasn't about keeping the rules. It wasn't about memorizing all the Bible verses. It wasn't about perfect attendance at synagogue. It was about relationship. In fact, this is how he would say it to his followers in John chapter 13. He says, you must love each other as I have loved you. In other words, you want to know what the measure is? You love people the way that I've loved you, to the extent that I've loved you. And then he says, all people will know that you are my followers if you love each other. This is what's going to mark you as followers of mine, he says. This is how people are going to know those people are Jesus followers. It's not going to be how much you know about the Bible. It's going to be how well you love. And so after Jesus' death and resurrection, the believers got busy spreading this message. They went all over the known world, and they started to spread this message. And here's what they said. It was not a message of, okay, here's all the stuff you should know about the Bible. That wasn't the message. It was a message of good news. It was a proclamation, and they went from city to city and from town to town, and they said, good news. Hey, we've got some good news we want to share with you. God loves you, and he sent Jesus to show you just how much he loves you. And because we have been recipients, because we have received God's love and God's grace in such an incredible way and to such an incredible degree, we can't help but love you as well. And it's just good news. And it wasn't, here's all the stuff you got to do. It was just, hey, we've got some news that we've got to share. God loves you, and because God loves us, we love you as well. Now, folks, that is so powerful, but there's something in us, there's something in you, there's something in me that keeps wanting to get it back to rules and religion, because religion's easier, isn't it? With religion, I know exactly where I stand. With religion, with rules, I know exactly when I've done enough to be in. I know exactly when I've crossed the threshold to say, okay, I'm on the in of this thing. And the problem is, you don't enter into relationship with religion. You enter into relationship with Jesus. Jesus invites us into relationship with him. Not a set of beliefs, not a set of writings, not a book. And so I think it's valuable that we explore the Bible. I think it's important. I think that we need to understand where it comes from, but only so much as it leads us to become more loving. Because followers of Jesus are not marked. Spiritual maturity is not about how much you know. It is about how well you love. It's a lot less about knowing. It's a lot more about doing. See, here's the second thing. Bible knowledge alone often leads us to prioritize rules over people. When you just have Bible knowledge, but you aren't growing in love, when it's all about learning, but it's not about doing, then you start to want to protect the rules over people. And this is the problem that Jesus was dealing with when it came to the Pharisees when he was here living on the earth. And here's what's so fascinating about this. When we read the stories of the life and teachings of Jesus, these Pharisees are always showing up on the scenes. They're always causing trouble. They come into every scene as the antagonist, always asking Jesus these leading questions, trying to get him into trouble. We see them as the instigators, but the reality is this. They were following their Old Testament scriptures, the law of Moses and the writings of the prophets. And this is simply how they interpreted it. To them, Jesus was actually the one who was against God. They were handed this law of Moses. They were handed the writings of the prophets and told, this is how you live life, and this is what it looks like to please God. And so now this guy comes along and starts turning all of that upside down. In their minds, they were actually on the side of God. To them, Jesus was the one who was ruffling feathers, and they were protecting what God wanted. And every time throughout history that someone feels the need to protect something, then the rules become more important than people. Every time throughout history, someone says, okay, we've got to protect this institution, this religion, this set of ideas, then we become protective of those things at the expense of people. And Jesus comes onto the scene, and he completely flips that upside down. In fact, at one point, Jesus heals someone on the Sabbath. Now, if you are a first century Jewish person and you're following the law of Moses, you know you do not work on the Sabbath. In fact, they took this to such an incredible degree that to even spit on the ground was against the law, because that meant that that had the potential to turn into fertilizer and you were actually farming, which is work. And so this is how far they took the interpretations. So here's Jesus, and he's healing someone on the Sabbath. And they're angry because the rules say you don't work on the Sabbath. It was their Hebrew scriptures, which, incidentally, same Bible we have today, by the way. And says no work can be done on the Sabbath. So Jesus heals, and it makes them so frustrated because he's breaking the rules. And it wasn't that they didn't want to see people healed. It's not that at all. In their minds, it was, we want to see you heal that person, but can you just wait for 12 hours? Can you just not break the rules? We're supposed to keep this day. Another point, Mark tells us in his account of Jesus' life that Jesus' disciples were walking through a field and they were picking off the heads of grain and eating it as they went. And the Pharisees saw this and they got upset and they got angry and they said, your disciples are harvesting. See, they're farming. That's work. They're harvesting on the Sabbath. And Jesus finally had had enough. He says this in Mark chapter 2. He says, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. Now, if you hear that verse, and maybe you've even heard that verse before, you've read it, we tend to just skip through that. But this is a game changer. If you are a first century Jewish person, Jesus is absolutely flipping the script. This is a huge shift in how they think. Jesus says, look, the Sabbath is not made for human beings. Human beings, the Sabbath was not made to meet the needs of people. The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, not people to meet the needs of the Sabbath. The Sabbath came after. In other words, it's not like God had all these rules and thought, man, I got all these great laws. Let's create some people to keep them. What am I going to do with all these incredible laws? I better build some people. God created people, and then he said, okay, I'm going to give you some laws to help you discover how to live. You could say it like this. Parents don't have children so that there will be someone to pick up the toys. Right? It's just, that's backwards. Now, you have to understand the position that the Pharisees are in. And I feel for these guys because in these stories with Jesus, many of us would have been them. Many of us would have been them. Well, we've got to protect. No, this is how things are supposed to be. We've got to protect that. We're on the side of God. We've got to protect that. Yeah, I know there's people involved, but, you know, these are the rules. This is what religion looks like. This is how it's supposed to go. And for many of us, and I really believe as you read through this, that for some of them, their intentions were pure. They felt like they needed to protect the consistency of the law. And Jesus comes along and he's upset in the apple cart. But when you think about what relationship looks like, every parent knows this. Every parent knows that sometimes you break your own rules. You break the rules that you created as a parent because it's in the best interest of your kids. And some of you would say this. Some of you grew up in a home that had very strict and very consistent rules. You never break the rules. It's always consistent. These are the rules. These are the rules of the house. We don't break these rules. And you couldn't wait to leave. You couldn't wait to get out of there, right? Great parents, here's what great parents do. They set the rules, and then, when it's appropriate, they break their own rules because it's in the best interest of their kids. Bedtime's at 8 o'clock. That's the rule. We go to bed at 8 o'clock every night. That's the rule. But tonight, we're staying up. Tonight, you're staying up till 9, and we're having ice cream. Yes. Every kid loves that, right? You go to school. That's the rule. You go to school every day. But tomorrow, you don't have to go. Because of what's going on in our world right now, we're making an exception. See, this is what great parents do. Great parents are discerning enough to know that there are times that you break the rules that you have established because it's actually in the best interest of your kids. And it cuts both ways, doesn't it? Sometimes I have to say to my kids, now listen, I know you're going to be upset, and you have my permission to be mad at me. But you know how I said that you could go there? You can't go there. You know how I gave you permission to go to that event? Now I've checked out that event, and now that I have, you're not going. But Dad, you promised. And isn't one of the rules never to break a promise? You're breaking the rules. I know, I am. I'm breaking the rules. I know I promised, but now that I've checked out where you're going, you're not going. But you said that they could go with me. I know, but now I'm telling you, they can't go. Why? Because I met them. and them aren't going. See, this is what great parents do, right? And do you know what is true in both of these scenarios? The best interest of the kids is more important than the rule that was established. We always put the person over the rule. It's how we operate in relationship. And sometimes when I break my own rules, my kids are excited. And sometimes when I break my own rules, they're frustrated. But do you know what the common denominator is in both scenarios? What is best for them? In fact, Jesus said this to the Pharisees. You're careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb gardens, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. You should tithe, yes, but do not neglect the more important things. What he's saying is you want the rules to be so consistent, but you're missing the bigger picture. You're missing relationship. It's all about keep the rules, keep the rules, keep the rules, but you're missing grace and justice and faith and mercy. And all of these things are at the expense of the consistency of the rules of religion. But I care more about who you're becoming and that you're developing a trusting relationship with your Heavenly Father. And that makes religious people very nervous. Do you know what John told us? When John gives his account of Jesus, do you know what he tells us about how Jesus operated? He says this, number three, Jesus balanced both grace and truth. He said, here's what Jesus did. This tension between grace and truth is one of the things that just drove people crazy about Jesus. And I can tell you, at Westbridge, we're doing our absolute best to preserve that tension between grace and truth. Between grace and truth. And it's probably one of the things that drives people crazy about Westbridge. Because we all tend to lean one direction or the other based on our upbringing, based on our temperament, based on our own personal style. Anytime that you hold tightly to both grace and truth, there's a tension between those ideals. But if you give up on either of those, if you give up on grace, if you give up on truth, you lose something important when it comes to loving well. Because loving well is the balance and the tension between grace and truth. See, John describes Jesus when he comes into the world and he says this, the Word became a man and lived among us. The Word was an idea, a thought. And he says this idea, this thought that we had about what God was like, it became human and lived among us. Jesus became human. He lived with us. When he says us, he's not talking about all humans. He's saying with us, with me, with Peter, with James. We saw him. We walked with him. He says we saw his divine greatness. The greatness that belongs to the only Son of the Father, the Word was full of grace and truth. Jesus was the embodiment of who God was, and he was full of grace and truth. And here's what John said, I spent years watching how he loved. I spent years watching what he did. And as I begin my description of what it was like to be with Jesus, here's what I saw. Jesus was absolutely full to the brim of both grace and truth. I want it to be one or the other. I want to push Jesus one direction or the other. I like the verses that talk about grace when it relates to me. And I like the verses that talk about truth when it relates to other people. And John said, I watched him. And the best way I can describe it is that he was just full of grace and truth. Grace and truth, grace and truth. Then he said this, out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. In other words, Jesus poured out the pitcher of grace, and then when it overflowed, he just smiled and kept pouring more grace. Then he clarifies. He said, the law was given through Moses. Now again, he's talking to people who understand the law. They're first century Jewish audience. He says, the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. The consistency, the rules, that came through the law of Moses. Later on, the Apostle Paul would write, we needed that. That brought us to the age of maturity, but then Jesus comes and we don't need that, falls away, and now we follow Jesus. Grace and truth come through Jesus. The law is given through Moses, grace and truth through Jesus. It was born into this world. The idea that we could hold on to grace and truth came through Jesus. And this is what made Jesus so messy and confusing and unpredictable. He was full of both grace and truth, and he brought it all to bear in every encounter that he had with everyone. And if you start to read through the stories of Jesus' life, you realize he was grace and truth in a body. Here's a couple of examples. You can read the story in John chapter 4, where Jesus approaches a woman at a well. First of all, first century Jewish people were not supposed to talk to Samaritans. Jesus is like, oh yeah, I'll talk to a woman Samaritan. How about that? He walks up to a woman at the well, and he says, hey, begins to have a dialogue with her, and he says, I would like some water. And then he tells her, I'm actually living water. And she starts to change the subject. She gets a little nervous. He says, why don't you go get your husband? And she says, well, I don't have a husband. And he goes, no, that's true, because you've had 5 husbands, and the one you're living with now is not your husband. And her jaw drops. And she's like, who are you? And he begins to tell her, I'm the one who can give you living water. You come to this well, and you try to quench your thirst, but I can give you water that will make you never thirst again. And he's referring to the fact that I want to show you what it looks like to enter into God's kingdom. And yet he brings truth to bear, but then he brings grace at the same time. You see this happen in many of his encounters with people. When he's put to death on the cross, there's a criminal next to him who says, I'm a criminal, I deserve this. And Jesus doesn't say, no, you don't deserve this. He says, yep. But today you're going to be with me in paradise. You can't undo all the stuff you've done, but at the same time, that's the truth part, but at the same time, I'm going to give you grace. Another time, Jesus is at the synagogue, he's at the temple, and there's the outer court, and some Pharisees and some other religious leaders bring a woman who's been caught in the act of adultery. And they say, hey, the law says that we should stone her. And so Jesus says, okay, those of you who are without sin, go for it. Throw the first stone. And one by one, they start to leave. And then Jesus looks at her and he says, where are these people who have condemned you? She said, they've gone away. And Jesus says, then I don't condemn you either. Now go and leave your life of sin. Go and leave your life of sin. I know that you were sinning. Stop doing that, but I don't condemn you. Truth and grace, truth and grace, truth and grace. I don't condemn you. Go and leave your life of sin. Well, which is it? I don't condemn you or you're a sinner? Yes. Okay, I don't condemn you. Now go and leave your life of sin. Well, did you have to bring up the sin part? Yes. Then how can you say she's not condemned? Because this is how I love. I am the embodiment of grace and truth. So Jesus came along, he calls sin what it is, and then he reaffirms how much he loves you. Jesus comes along, he calls sin what it is, and then he says, but I don't condemn you. Now stop doing that. I love you, and that's hurting you. So stop doing that. Leave your life of sin. And if you don't, I love you. And if you can't, I love you. And if the wounds and the shrapnel of your own sin has led you to a place where you're not even sure you'll ever be able to walk away from the complexity of your sin, I love you. And if someone else has sinned against you and it has sent you into a spiral of self-destructive behavior that you're not even sure you'll ever recover from, I love you. And the truth is, you're a sinner, but the grace is, I don't condemn you. And nobody will ever love you more. And I couldn't love you more myself. It's grace and truth, grace and truth, grace and truth. And this is why it's always messy when it comes to relationships. And this is why it's always messy around here at Westridge. Because we're doing everything that we can to hold to both of these things. Here's what the Bible teaches. Stop doing that. Walk away from that because it's hurting you. Yeah, but what if I don't and what if I can't? Then we love you. And that makes things really messy. But it's grace and truth. See, number 4, loving like Jesus commands is far less complicated, but far more demanding. It's just not that complicated, but it's very, very demanding. When the nation of Israel was given the law of Moses, it served a purpose because it was given to an ancient Near East civilization where there was no law and there was no order. And so God gave them exactly what they needed at that time. And then Jesus comes and he changes the rules without changing the spirit behind it. The spirit behind the law of Moses is the same as what Jesus teaches. It's just that it had to be a little bit more complex to bring them to the point where Jesus then says, now I can reveal the spirit behind it. When my kids are younger, there are more rules and it's more complicated. When my kids are younger, it's don't do this, don't do that. Go to bed at this time, brush your teeth at this time, read this, complete that homework assignment, eat this, go here, don't run in the house, don't play in the street. It's complicated, it's complex, it's multi-layered systems of rules. Why? What's the spirit behind that? The spirit behind all of that is, I love you and I don't want you to die. Right? I need to keep you alive. Because I love you, I don't want you to do things that will hurt you. Now, you're not going to understand the spirit behind that right now, so right now it's very complex and it's very layered. Don't do this, don't do that. Go here, do this at this time, do this, do what I say, listen to me, trust me, do this. As they grow, less and less rules are required. It becomes less complicated. But it becomes far more demanding. It isn't about keep this rule and that rule and this rule and that rule. Now you understand the spirit behind these rules. See, my life was amazing when I was 9 years old. I mean, at 9, I was killing it. I mean, I had like no responsibility and tons of freedom. I was old enough to have freedom, not old enough where I was adulting. It was great. But you know that the older you get, the more demanding life becomes. That you pick up freedom, but you also pick up responsibility as you get older. And what you discover is that as you grow up, there are less and less rules and more personal responsibility for what kind of person you are becoming. It's less complicated, but it's more demanding. And so God gives them the law of Moses. He says, this will give you order. In fact, here's 10 big ones, just to kind of be your guide, right? Trust in me, honor me. Like, don't steal from each other, don't lie to each other, like, don't kill each other, that'd be great. And what's the spirit behind it, right? It's, I love you, and this is the best way to live. And a lot of people look at the Ten Commandments, and they go, well, if I keep the Ten Commandments, then I can have a relationship with God. And God's going, no, you have a relationship with me. Now, I'm just telling you, because we already have a relationship and because I already love you, this is just like the best way to live. If you would just not kill each other and not steal from each other and not lie to each other, you're just going to find that's the best way to live. But that's not a prerequisite to relationship. God says, no, because we already have a relationship, this is just the best way to live. And so the spirit behind this is to bring order into a world that had no order. He says, look, these are the laws, but if you get down, if you dig beneath the surface, this is the written law, but the spirit behind that is, I love you, and I want you to experience the best life possible, the fullest life possible. So then we fast forward to Jesus, and they want to point back to the law of Moses, and they ask him, they want to trap him in this, and they say, well, which commandment is the most important? And rather than go back to the words of the written law and this list of rules and try to play that game, Jesus cuts right to the spirit. Here's what he says. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and a second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets. He goes, all of these writings, all of these rules, all of these things that you have all this knowledge on that you want to keep so consistent. I'm telling you, he says, it can all be met. The entire law, all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments. You want to know what is required. You want to know the written law. You want to know, okay, what exactly do I have to do so I know who's in and who's out? And Jesus says, look, all of that stuff, the spirit behind all of that is this, love God and love people. Love God and love people. In fact, you show your love for God by how well you love people. The written rule is, don't hit your sister. But the spirit of that is, I love you and I love her. You're my daughter and she's my daughter. And when you hurt her, it hurts me. and it hurts you. And I don't want that. And so love her. Now, the written law is don't hit her. Don't push her. Don't talk to her that way. But the spirit behind that is, you're my daughter. She's my daughter. Love her because I love you and I love her. And so Jesus moves beyond the written law and he cuts right to the spirit. And what you discover is that when you get to the spirit of the law, it's far less complicated, far fewer rules, but it is far more demanding. Not killing my neighbor, easy. Loving him, that's more demanding. Not lying to my neighbor is easy. Loving them, that's more demanding. Not stealing from my neighbor, pretty easy. Loving him, that's more demanding. So, what does all of this have to do with Bible Q&A? As much as I love diving into questions about the Bible, you probably haven't noticed this, but I've been geeking out over the last month during this series. And as much as I love that, and as much as I love learning new things, if we ever get to the point where we equate spiritual maturity with Bible knowledge, then we are in danger of accidentally becoming Pharisees, where we work to protect our experience and our preferences at the expense of becoming more loving. And if ever we prioritize learning over doing, and knowledge over serving, then we have missed what it is all about. See, if your reading of the Bible and your study of the Bible and your pursuit of Bible knowledge ever causes you to treat someone poorly in an attempt to somehow protect the consistency of the scriptures, then you're reading it wrong. And if your reading of the Bible and your study of the Bible and your pursuit of Bible knowledge does not lead you to become more and more and more like Jesus, then you're reading it wrong. It is a lot easier to learn a lot of stuff about the Bible than it is to love like Jesus. It's a lot easier to learn a lot of knowledge than it is to love well, particularly those who might disagree with you. But we are not called to know a lot about the Bible. We are called to love like Jesus. It is less complicated. It is far more demanding. So here's the bottom line. When it comes to reading the Bible, we've gone through a lot in the last month. We've gone through a lot of stuff about where did it come from and how do we read it and all of these things. And many of you submitted questions, and we have a lot of questions that we didn't get to. You can tune in. We're going to do a Facebook After Hours, Westbridge After Hours tonight at 7 o'clock. We're going to go through a bunch of questions that we weren't able to get to during this series. However, bottom line is this. What does love demand of me? What does love demand? I have this idea about the Bible, and I've read this, and I have questions about this, but what does love demand of me? In this situation, and with these people, and in this relationship, what does love demand? Not what do I believe, because we can believe different things and still treat each other with love. The question to ask is not what do I believe, or what is my deeply held conviction? The question to ask is this: what does love demand of me in this situation, with this person, with this relationship? What does love demand? And love always demands that I put you above my view. I have a view, I have convictions, I have beliefs, but love demands that I always put you above my view. I have a view on that topic, but you're more important than my view. I have a conviction, but you are more important than my conviction. I think I believe what the Bible says. I think I have the correct interpretation. I know what the Bible teaches in this area, but you are more important to me than asserting how right I am. Most importantly, I know what Jesus says. And he never let his view supersede a you. He always put a you ahead of his view. He embraced the tension between grace and truth. And while he always brought truth, he always brought grace to bear as well. And love demands that even when we disagree, and especially when we disagree, that we treat each other with grace. And so, as we kind of bring Bible Q&A, this whole series, to a conclusion, study the Bible. Read it. Learn about Jesus. Learn as much as you can about the Bible. Learn as much as you can about Jesus. Gain Bible knowledge, but only so much as it leads you to be more and more loving like Jesus. Spiritual maturity is not based in what you know. It is about how well you love, especially those who are not like you, who disagree with you, who are different than you. And let's be a church. Let's be a group of people who are so committed to loving like Jesus that when people show up to this place, it makes an impact in their life. And if you are here today and you've never experienced the grace of God in your life, you've never experienced the grace of God like we've talked about, I want you to know that the invitation is extended to you, that the message of the Bible, cover to cover, if I could be so bold as to summarize it, is this: God is building a family and he wants you in it. And the scriptures tell us that from the very first human being to every one of us, we've been invited into community with God. We've been invited to exist in loving community with God and with each other. And if you've never said yes to that invitation, you can do that this morning. The scriptures tell us that from the first human beings, every one of us said, God, thanks but no thanks, living life my own way. And as a result, it caused brokenness between us and God, brokenness between us and each other. And yet, at the right time in human history, God sent Jesus into the world. And he said, it's not about the rules. It's about love and relationship, grace and truth. Yes, you've sinned, but I love you. Yes, you've sinned, but I love you. There's relationship and you're invited into my family. And I can forgive your sin. And I won't hold it against you. And I don't hold your past against you. But you are invited into my family. And in the most incredible display of love, Jesus allowed himself to be put to death. His body was laid in a tomb, and according to multiple eyewitness accounts, he rose from the dead. And what that means is that you and I have been invited to be a part of God's family forever and ever. That death is not the end, that there's more to this life than this life. And if you've never said yes to that invitation, it isn't about your behavior. It isn't about something that you have to do to somehow earn your way in. It's an invitation that has been extended to every single one of us. And if you'd like to say yes, you can do that right where you sit by just agreeing with this simple prayer. It goes like this: Jesus, please forgive my sins. Forgive me for those times I've lived life my own way. I've walked away from you. And I recognize it's caused brokenness between myself and you, myself and others. So I pray, heal that brokenness. Adopt me into your family. Make me your son. Make me your daughter. And help me to follow your way of living life as best as I know how from this moment on. In Jesus' name, amen. And if you're here today and you'd say, man, that is my next step, then we celebrate that with you just as we celebrate that each and every week here at Westbridge. So here's how we're going to close. In just a moment, you'll have the opportunity to bring back as a part of our worship a percentage of what God's entrusted to you financially. As many of us prepare for that, grab this connection card if you would. If you are a guest here with us, if you just fill that out with as much info as you feel comfortable giving, we have a little gift we want to send you in the mail as our way of saying thanks for being here. If you're a regular attender, put your name and email, and then here's some great next steps on the back. If you're here today and you'd say, man, I prayed that prayer, I want to say yes to following Jesus, just check that first box. That just lets us know you prayed, and I want to personally follow up and answer any questions you might have this week. For others of you, maybe you'd say this: coming up here in just a couple of weeks, 3 weeks from today, we're going to be doing water baptism. And if you've made a decision to follow Jesus, but you haven't yet been baptized in water, this would be a great next step for you. We've got Captain Party Time Hot Tub Rental all lined up and ready to rock. And we're going to be doing it right outside in the parking lot and during the Sunday morning service. So you come here, invite friends and family to celebrate with you. As a church family, we're going to celebrate this together. And every time that we put someone in the water and bring them out again, it's a symbol of death and resurrection, of saying the old me is put to death, a new me is risen with Christ. And man, that's just something we celebrate. It represents someone who says, my life has been changed because of the grace of Jesus. And so if you haven't made that decision to be baptized in water, but you are a follower of Jesus, I want to encourage you to sign up for water baptism June 24th. That's 3 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today. Today's the 10th. Holy cow. 2 weeks from today. Sorry. Yeah, I'm behind a week. And then, so 2 weeks from today, sign up for that. And then lastly, if you'd like to help out with kids, Always during the summer, we have people going on vacation, going to the cabin, and those kinds of things. So we're always looking for a few extra hands in the summer, just in the summer, to help with kids. If you are a parent and you'd say, you know what, I could jump in 1 to 2 weeks over the course of the summer, would you let us know that and just write summer help on the back of your connection card? And that lets us know that we can get in touch with you and hopefully plug some of those gaps so that we can make sure that we have quality service and programming going on for kids all throughout the summer. That would be awesome. And then I think that's it. So tonight at 7 o'clock, you can jump onto Facebook. It's facebook.com/Westbridge Church. And go to our Westbridge page. At 7 o'clock, we're going to jump on there. We're going to take an hour and go through a bunch of questions that you guys have submitted that we weren't able to cover on a Sunday morning. So if you were doing, this is the first time we've tried this, so we're calling it just Westbridge After Hours. Jump on there, and we'll kind of be a continuation of this series and kind of the culmination of all those questions. And then if you'd like to give today, you can use this envelope. Drop it into one of the giving stations on your way out. If you'd like to give later in the week, you can take that envelope with you and just drop it in the mail, postage paid. You can also give online at westbridgechurch.com. I know a number of you choose that option each week as well. Or you can give through texting 763-333-2221. Text any dollar amount to that number to get started. You can also give through our app. So lots of ways to give. Bottom line is that we're so thankful for your generosity. We could not do what we do without so many of you who say, man, God's the owner of it all. He's entrusted it to me, and I'm returning a portion of that as a part of my worship. So thank you so much. And every time that you do that, your dependence in God continues to grow, and you help us move forward as a church. And so thanks for being such a generous church. Next week, we're going to launch a new series for the summer. This is going to be our summer soundtrack series. And so we have some great guests, speakers coming over the next few weeks to speak live and in person. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And then that'll kind of take us through the summer. And so if you found this series helpful, I'd encourage you to invite a friend to join you next week as we launch that series.